A phenomenon happens in the winter when the weather is cold. Starfish can be dislodged from the ocean floor and wash up onto the shore by the thousands. And if they aren't returned to the ocean, they will die on the beach. A young woman named Sandra walked along such a beach early one morning. She was surprised to see that the beach was littered with starfish as far as the eye could see. And as she walked every few steps, she picked up a starfish and she very gently tossed it back into the ocean. She came upon an older man, Henry, who was sitting in a low beach chair with a coat and a hat, reading a newspaper. He peered over the paper and he shouted out to her, "I don't know why you're doing that. There are so many. You'll never be able to help them all. There's no way you're going to make a difference." Sandra thought for a moment. Then she reached down to the starfish at her foot and she gently tossed it into the ocean. She turned back to look at Henry and she said, "I made a difference to that one." This is called the starfish story. It's a very well-loved parable in nonprofit work. Maybe you've heard it. It reminds us that while systemic problems can seem so overwhelming, each one of us can make a difference in the lives of another person. And if we all did that, the change would be massive. So today in our time together, I want us to think about the starfish as the children in our community. For almost 20 years, I've been working as an advocate for children with disabilities. Right after I graduated from college, I worked as the education director at a theater company for kids. And I taught a beginning acting class that included a 10-year-old boy with Down syndrome. At that point, I had no experience with kids with disabilities. I had no idea what to do. And I figured it out, and that experience changed my worldview. It also led me to follow my passion, to change career paths, and I'm now the CEO of a national organization called Kids Included Together. And we work to get kids of all types of disabilities and chronic health conditions included in their schools and communities. Kids like Alejandro, a 6-year-old who has spina bifida and uses a wheelchair, and he's just now figuring out how to navigate his new elementary school campus. Kids like Allison, a 9-year-old from Chicago who has Down syndrome and who loves her weekly Girl Scout troop meeting more than anything else in her life. And kids like Brandon from San Diego, a 12-year-old with autism, who is now excelling on his school's robotics team. At Kids Included Together, we teach teachers and caregivers how to meet the needs of all kids. And kids like Alejandro and Allison and Brandon make up about 10 to 12% of the population. At least that's how it's been until recently. Over the past handful of years, we've seen a dramatic increase in the number of children who need extra support to participate in school and community settings. It's no longer just kids who have a diagnosis or a disability label who are referred to us. One of the things we do is operate a coaching call center. And the number of calls that are coming in from teachers and childcare providers who have concerns about a child's behavior and mental health are dramatically increasing. Teachers are increasingly identifying social-emotional learning deficits in the kids that they serve. And what we're seeing in our own practice is validated by recent research. So every 24 months, we conduct a needs analysis so we can see that our programs are evolving to meet the current needs. In our latest report, we found some interesting things. One, the incidence of children with mental health and behavioral challenges is rising dramatically. As we could see this in our own data, and it's also true in the research. And two, that across every dimension, no matter how you slice the data, by age, by race, by gender, by socioeconomic status, our kids are struggling. So the report includes data like more than 10% of young children now have clinically significant mental health problems, which include emotional, behavioral, and social relationship problems. This comes from the American Academy of Pediatrics. 12.5% of kids 12 to 17 have had a major depressive episode in the last year. This is a higher prevalence than reported every year since 2004. The prevalence of a major depressive episode among females in this period was more than twice as high as for males. The rates of depression in 20-year-olds have doubled since 2009, and now we have two times as many young people in serious psychological distress as we did just 10 years ago. Two times as many in one decade. The National Center for Health Statistics and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recently released data showing that in 2017, suicide was the second highest cause of death in young people age 15 to 24. And overall, deaths by suicide among young people age 10 to 24 have increased by 56% from 2000 to 2017. And these statistics are shocking, and they're heartbreaking. And the children and youth reflected in these statistics are kids in every kind of community, the kids with the most advantages and the kids with the least. A recent report that I saw from the Pew Research Center showed that 7 in 10 teenagers see anxiety and depression as major problems among their peers. Concern about mental health cuts across gender, race, socioeconomic lines, with roughly equal shares of teenagers across these demographic groups saying that this is a major, significant issue in their community. Mental health in children and young adults has been declining steadily for the past 50 years. It appears to be hitting a crisis point. Healthy mental, emotional, behavioral development is a critical foundation for a productive adulthood. The need is real, and the need is urgent. I'm reminded of a quote from poet and educator Gabriela Mistral. "Many things we need can wait. The child cannot. Now is the time his bones are being formed, her blood is being made, his mind is being developed. To them, we cannot say tomorrow. Their name is today." You might be wondering what is causing all of these changes that we're seeing. And the truth is that researchers don't yet know. We suspect things like increased use of social media are having a negative impact on the mental health of our young people, but we don't yet have evidence from longitudinal studies. Small studies do show a correlation between time spent online and sleep problems and depression in teenagers. We also know that kids and young adults spend less time connecting to each other in person, in real time and real life, and more time connecting electronically. Some suspect that that alone is leading to more social isolation, and that kids aren't developing healthy communication and relationship skills. This is a bit of uncharted territory because it's only really been since 2015 that 92% of teenagers have had a smartphone in their pocket and basically unfettered access to social media and the internet pretty much 24 hours a day. That doesn't necessarily explain the rise of mental health issues in early childhood, but even in preschool children, there are more screens. Kids today live in a very different world than kids of previous decades, and yet our educational and our institutional systems really haven't adapted to their changing needs. And this appears to be putting increased stress on children and affecting their mental health and their overall well-being in negative ways. So to be sure, we have to look at children's well-being through a holistic way and a systems lens, especially looking at our education systems and our healthcare systems. And we need to put children on our national policy agenda. But while we wait for that to happen, there's a lot that we can do now to help the children in our community. That was a lot of bad news. There is also good news and a lot to be excited about in our youngest citizens. Our youngest kids are known as Generation Alpha. These are children born from 2010 to children that will be born up until 2024. And they will be the most culturally diverse generation. They will likely follow in their parents' footsteps. These are the children of millennials, and be more open to diversity of all kinds. And that is going to be a very, very good thing. The oldest kids of this generation were born the year the iPad was released, so they're also the most digitally fluent generation. They will live fluidly between the virtual world and the real world, and I think because of this, they will figure out how to modulate their use of electronics and integrate this better into their lives. Increased automation and artificial intelligence will give these children more time to pursue their passions, new digital ways of learning and absorbing information, and pursuing their interests. So what we may be experiencing is the transition from life as it is to life as it will be. And so I think at this time, we really need to help our young people through that transition. So let's talk about how we can do that. Children's health is the extent to which children or groups of children are able to develop and realize their potential, to satisfy their needs, and to develop the capacities that allow them to interact successfully with their biological, their physical, and their social environments. So the Search Institute of Minnesota is nationally known for their scientific research on the state of youth in America. They have studies on developmental assets. These are 40 things that kids need to thrive. This has been conducted over decades with more than 6 million children. And I think that this developmental assets framework is a great place to start in thinking about what we need to do to increase the overall wellness of our kids. This developmental assets framework is broken down into 8 domains. Each domain has a set of age-appropriate indicators. So I'm going to just mention the 8 domains. And what I'd like you to do is be thinking about ideas, things you think that you might be able to do to help kids in that domain. And then we're going to quickly chat about it. So be thinking of ideas. The first domain is support, and support is where the young person draws support from adults in their family, in their neighborhood, in their school, and in their church. The Search Institute found that kids need to have positive, trusting relationships with adults who are not their parents. That is very important to kids growing up. The second is empowerment, that children and youth feel safe in their community and that they feel a sense of participation, that they have a role to play and their voice is heard in a community. Boundaries and expectations, that a young person's friends and the adults in their lives are positive role models and model pro-social behavior, and that there are also high expectations of them with clear consequences, clear rules and clear consequences. Constructive use of time. This could be a very good antidote to all the time spent online. This is about engagement. It's important that kids have access to creative activities, music, theater, dance, that they can play sports, that they participate in a religious community, and that kids spend 3 or more hours a week engaged in purposeful activities. Another domain is commitment to learning, and this is about their academic motivation, that they feel bonded to their school, also that they have academic motivation, that they're looking forward to something, and also that they learn to read for pleasure. Positive values, developing the value system that will guide them to a healthy adulthood. Social competencies, things like decision-making, empathy, and how to positively resolve conflicts in your life. And also a positive identity, that our young people feel a sense of purpose and agency and optimism about their future. So what are we going to do to improve the lives of the kids in our community? How can we, as caring individuals, possibly make a difference when there are just so darn many starfish to help? Luckily, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of nonprofits and schools here in Orange County who would love to have your help, and there are no end to the ways that you can make a difference. Could you volunteer as a mentor in an after-school program? Could you volunteer to help with a reading program in an elementary school, either by helping kids learn to read or by reading to kids yourself? Could you coach a sports team in a lower socioeconomic area? Could your family spend time helping out in a food bank once a month? My husband, who is also Sherlyn Neblett's brother, has spent the last 5 years making the difference in the life of one child. As a court-appointed special advocate, or a CASA, he was assigned to Tim, who at the time was a 9-year-old, who, with a devastating family story, and as a result, had very significant behavioral challenges. He had already been kicked out of several foster homes for violence, and at school, he was participating in about 30 minutes of classroom time, and the rest of the time, he would just wander around the campus or sit on the playground, followed by an instructional aide. Over the past 5 years, Tim has bounced around to foster homes and schools all over the county. Will has provided consistent care and support. He spends time with him twice a month. And because he was a public school teacher, he got the educational rights for the child so that he could help guide his education. Now, Will is very humble, and if he was here and you asked him, he would say that he had really done nothing. It has taken very little time, and he really hasn't done much at all. But Tim is now 14 years old. He attends a regular junior high school. He's getting straight A's. And just recently, he was given the Principal's Award for Outstanding Citizenship. He recently told Will, "Through all I've been through, you have been the one consistent person in my life." And we know that from the research, that having a consistent relationship with a positive adult who cares about you is very critical to kids and their ability to thrive. So I would love for you now to take a moment to reflect on what we've talked about throughout the service this morning. You can close your eyes if that helps you think. And think about what talents you bring to bear, what gifts you can offer, what resources you have that you can share, and how you can make a difference. So after we give that a moment of thought, I'm going to ask you to turn to your neighbor and share one idea that you have. This is not the time where you're committing to it. This is brainstorming, so don't worry about that. And then a little later on, we're going to have a card where you can write that idea down. So go ahead and take a moment, close your eyes, and think about what's something you could do to help make a difference. If you have your idea already, it sounds like some murmuring, go ahead and turn to your neighbor and share just one quick idea. All right. Thank you. Sounds like we already have so many wonderful ideas. And I'm so sorry. Not quite yet, but we're almost there. Oh, a chime. Good. Ha! The magical chime. Thank you for that. It's hard to get people to start talking and then ask them to be quiet immediately. I'm sorry to bring the bad news this morning with the very disappointing statistics, but the good news is that you can make a powerful and a positive difference improving the lives of children in pretty much any way you can think of, using the gifts and talents and resources that you already have. And the difference that you make will pay dividends for decades into the future, as healthier children will be better able to face the challenges of tomorrow, but also to lead all of us through them. So I know as a congregation, you're about to get started generating ideas today and next Sunday as part of your Caring for Kids initiative. And I really urge you to get involved. Don't be a Henry and think that because you can't help everyone, you can't help anyone. Let's all adopt Sandra's attitude and realize that any difference we make for one children or a small group of children is an important difference. You can make a powerful and positive difference to one or a few starfish. I want to leave you this morning with a quote from one of my favorite people who I consider to be the patron saint of childhood, Fred Rogers. We live in a world in which we need to share responsibility. It's easy to say, it's not my child, not my community, not my problem. Then there are those who see the need and respond. I consider those people my heroes. Thank you.
As a faith community, our work in the world is to respond when we see that something is wrong. And as I said before, our moral compass has shifted to a place that we don't want it to be. And we feel like one of the ways that we can help to make the positive change needed is by doing just what Tori has talked about this morning, helping children wherever, however, whenever we can. So I'm going to encourage you, if you haven't filled this out yet, go ahead and do so right now. And at the very least, your name and whether you're staying for lunch after the service next week, because the service next week will be part two of what we're doing here. It will be the results of these cards, and I'll be preaching, and we'll be talking about what comes next with this. But as Tori said, you're not committing to anything by filling out this card and putting an idea down. But what we are doing is taking the temperature of this community and finding out where our passions are, where our skills are, what resources we have, and what we think that we might be able to do to make a difference. So please, please fill out one of these cards. And as the offering basket comes around in a minute, we invite you to not just put your offering in there this morning, but this card as well. And I'm very excited about this program, because what I've been hearing from people ever since I first came to this congregation 4 years ago is they want to feel like they're making a difference in the world. And we recognize that there are a lot of talented people in this room, people with unique skills, with the ability to mentor, with the ability to inspire, with the ability to be there for children in our community. And we want to take full advantage of that. We want to make sure that we are doing something that is meaningful, that gives us an identity out into the community, that makes people understand that we are the folks who are caring for kids. So I encourage you to come back next week for part two of this, to stay for lunch next week, to fill out a card, and above all, to get on board with what we are doing here. I now invite the offering baskets to be passed around and invite you, as always, to give generously as we work to do this important change in our world today.